It's Friday, March 2nd, 2018, and you're welcome to this podcast from Black Knight, Ireland's leading provider of web hosting, domains and internet services. My name is Conor Muinicon, and my guest this week is Cathy Kleiman, who is an expert in internet, free expression and intellectual property law. She's just announced the relaunch of an organisation called the Domain Name Rights Coalition, but that's not what we're going to talk to her about today. Because in Cathy's spare time and for many years, she has dedicated herself to raising awareness of the role of women pioneers in the history of computers, starting with the six women who programmed ENIAC, the world's first electronic programmable computer, which was revealed in 1946. With International Women's Day just a week away, this podcast is one of a series of media pieces which we're doing in Black Knight on the subject of women in technology and entrepreneurship. It's in association with our friends at .co, the top-level domain for entrepreneurs. We'll tell you more about them after the show. But first, let's meet our guest, Cathy Kleiman.
Kind of, I'm looking forward to sharing the story of the ENIAC programmers, but researching them is what I do by night. By day, I do internet law and policy, and I do a lot of work at ICANN, where I'm involved in negotiating a lot of the privacy and free speech and intellectual property protections that we create in the domain name system.
So, as you were explaining to me a little bit earlier, Cathy, you've studied law, but your undergraduate study was in computer science.
My undergraduate study was a combination, actually, of social theory and computer science. Mm. People thought I was absolutely crazy. But when I went to college, my mother said, study anything you want, but computer science is where the jobs are going to be. And of course, my mother was right.
Excellent. But as you were saying to me, Cathy, it's kind of that path in a way that led you to become interested in the ENIAC programmers.
Right. Because I was taking a lot of computer science, particularly a lot of programming, and I really liked it. And I was pretty good at it. And I loved programming in C and Lisp and Pascal and I don't know, a number of languages. And but there was, you know, kind of an emotional issue that as the level of the class went up, and, you know, at some point I was in the top classes in programming, the number of women went down. Precipitously. So at some point, there were no other women in the classes, no female faculty, no other female students. And, you know, sometimes there was maybe one other woman in these upper level courses. And that made me wonder whether women actually belonged in computer science and in computing careers. Hmm. And I did know of two marvelous women. I knew of Grace Hopper in the 20th century. She was Captain Grace Hopper in the U.S. Navy. She would retire as Rear Admiral Grace Hopper. And I also knew about Lady Ada Lovelace in the 19th century. But Lady Ada Lovelace was the 19th century, Grace Hopper was the 20th century, and one woman a century succeeding in computing did not make me feel warm and fuzzy about my future in the field. So I started looking at history. It seems kind of crazy, but I was in a women's history class, and it was a good excuse to look for other women in the history of computing. And I didn't find any other names, but I found these pictures, and they were pictures of ENIAC. A lot of pictures were taken of ENIAC in 1946. It had been a secret U.S. Army project building this first all-electronic programmable general-purpose computer. It was built secretly in Philadelphia, but it was unveiled about 6 months after the war ended. And there were tons of gorgeous pictures that were taken. The pictures generally kind of highlight how huge the machine was. But in those pictures were men and women. Mm. But in the captions were only the names of the men. And so I took these pictures to my professors, and I asked who the women were. And they didn't know, but one of them sent me to the co-founder of the Computer History Museum, which is a great place. It's now in Silicon Valley, but then it was in Boston, and I was a student in Boston. So I went to meet with the co-founder of the Computer History Museum, and I was so excited, I asked who the women were. And she rolled her eyes and told me they were models, that the women in these pictures of ENIAC were models. And, you know, my heart fell. You know, I was looking for some role models. And also, it didn't seem quite right. These women looked like they knew exactly what they were doing, and they were in lots of the pictures. And so, being as stubborn as only a college undergraduate can be, I tracked them down. and found out that the women in the pictures were actually the original programmers of ENIAC, and all six of ENIAC's original programmers were women.
How extraordinary, Kathy. And not just the fact that all six of, if you like, these were the first programmers of the first electronic stored program computer, but as well as that, they were airbrushed out of history. They were whitewashed out of history.
Exactly right. And it would take me years to find out why. But exactly. And that to this day, people don't know that our pioneers are actually that there were so many women in early computing and early software that we don't know. That seems to be a big problem. We're trying to encourage girls, minorities, everyone to go into STEM, and yet we don't know who our pioneers are.
Well, this can, I suppose, partly explain the difficulties in encouraging women. And really, you're talking about the fact that, if you like, misogyny and sexism was there right from the very start of the tech industry in that case. I mean, this seems to have been really baked right in from the start.
Well, actually, you know, it's really interesting that you mention that, because when I talked with the engineers, and I met some of them, passed away before I started my work. They had a great deal of respect for the programmers. Hmm. And when the programmers, the women, talk about being part of the ENIAC team, they talk about being part of a team that they took great pride in. So my takeaway from that is that the first programming team for the first modern computer was actually very diverse. But somehow the women... And the women were treated with respect, and you ask them, and they say they were treated with a great deal of respect. Mm. But somehow that respect never became public. It stayed private. And on the day ENIAC was unveiled to the world, it was Demonstration Day, February 15th, 1946. And ENIAC is unveiled to the world, and it runs this very complicated differential calculus program, which the women program. The men, the engineers are introduced, the army officers are introduced, and the women are not introduced. Maybe there wasn't enough time. Maybe there were already too many people. Maybe it was because they were women. And so they kind of didn't get put into history because no one ever knew what they did. But the team did. Really proud of the team.
That is interesting, the way you talk about the team. It sounds like back in the... It's 1940s, isn't it, we're talking about, Kathy?
Right, and particularly 1945 and 1946.
It sounds like back in those years, there was a kind of a geek solidarity between the men and the women, the engineers and the mathematicians, something that people of any gender who are involved in technology today could instantly recognize and identify. But that when it came to the army brass and the management, the politicians and the establishment, this wasn't something they could get their heads around.
They couldn't be bothered. Exactly. They couldn't be bothered to list their names in the press releases or anything.
So take us back, Kathy, to the start of this. Did you find out, first of all, how were these women recruited, and what were the skills that they brought, and why were they recruited, and what was it that they were asked to do?
Great questions, Con. It's a fascinating story, because before World War II, women math majors, and most of these women were math majors in college, women math majors had only one profession, teaching. They weren't hired generally in the United States as accountants, bookkeepers, or actuaries. They had the opportunity to be math teachers. And so the war starts, and suddenly the U.S. military is desperate for women in all sorts of occupations. So men are going off to war, and the country needs women in the factories to make the munitions, to make the tanks. They need them in the farm because somebody has to harvest. And it turns out they need them in mathematics to calculate ballistics trajectories. That's the differential calculus equation for an artillery trajectory, the path of a missile from the time it leaves the muzzle of a gun till it hits a target. So these very, very complicated calculus equations were calculated by hand at that point, and it took 30 to 40 hours to do one by hand. Military didn't, you couldn't do them by computer. We didn't, the electromechanical machines of the day didn't do it. So you did it by hand and using these kind of mechanical desktop calculators. And the military went out first in Philadelphia, then to New York, then across the country, looking for women with mathematics backgrounds to calculate these ballistics trajectories. And all of the women who became programmers answered the Army's call for women and for women math majors, and did an extraordinary job during the war. So some of them spent several years hand calculating ballistics, and then the Army chose six to program ENIAC.
So they were there because of the task in hand, really, Kathy, which was mathematical. It was differential calculus, and they were there for their mathematical expertise first and foremost. But they had to teach themselves how to become programmers because no one had ever programmed a computer before.
That's right. And there were no programming languages. There were no programming manuals. There were no programming tools. They did. They had to teach themselves. And because the engineers, the ENIAC was 42 units. And because the engineers were still finishing the units of this very experimental machine that many people didn't think would work, many people in the Army didn't think would work, there was really no time to teach the programmers how to program anything. So instead, they were handed the wiring diagrams of ENIAC. And basically, the implication was, we did the hard part, we built it, you do the easy part and make it do that differential calculus equation. Wow. There were only 10 words of memory in the machine, and they did it. They did it. They taught themselves, and they taught each other, and then they programmed the ballistics trajectory.
Absolutely extraordinary. Who were these women, Kathy? One of them was Irish.
They were indeed. Let me give you the names of all the women, because they just, we need to write all of these names into the record. And the names are going to sound really long because I'm going to give you their maiden names and their married names, because sure, occasionally I've seen papers where they write about Betty Holberton by her married name and then Betty Schneider by her maiden name and have no idea it's the same person. So I'll give you the names of all six programmers, and then I'd love to talk about Kay. So there was Jean Jennings Bardick, Betty Schneider Holberton, Marlon Westcoff Meltzer, Frances Bylas Spence, Ruth Lichterman Teitelbaum, and Kathleen McNulty Mockley Antonelli. And Kathleen, or Kay, as everyone called her, and years, decades later when I met her, we called her Kay too. Kay was born in Ireland.
So she was born in County Donegal, I think you were telling me, and moved to the United States as a child.
She did. She arrived, I believe, when she was 3 years old, and she didn't speak a word of English.
That's right. She was from the Gaeltacht, the Irish-speaking area in County Donegal. But she went on to study mathematics, Kathy, and so would she have been typical, or her story have been typical of the six of them?
Everyone's story is similar, and everyone's story is different. She and her best friend, Frances Bylas Spence, were both immigrants to the country and had come in. And so they were the first of their, of their families to go to college. And I found it extraordinary that the families of all of the programmers were committed to education for women. You know, this is an issue we argue about now around the world, right? And yet, it's the middle of the Depression. We're talking about immigrant families. Jean would come from a farm family in Missouri, and there's not a lot of money. Men aren't going to college, and yet these families send not only their sons, but their daughters. And then Kay and Fran were actually at Chestnut Hill College for Women in Philadelphia, just outside Philadelphia. And they were two of the three math majors in their class and got to know each other very, very well. Apparently hung out, did homework together. And when Kay saw the listing that the Army was looking for female math majors, she immediately called Fran and the other woman because they were a team. They were bonded. And she said, we all have to interview for this job together. So she made sure they knew about the opportunity as well.
It must have been fascinating listening to their stories, Kathy.
Yes, it was fascinating to hear their stories, and I was very proud of their accomplishments. And after listening to their stories, you know, I thought that these stories told of an incredible achievement that no one else seemed to see. And I thought maybe if we could record them telling their stories in kind of an oral history, a video oral history, that maybe we could, you know, put them back on the record and get them credit for some of the invention, innovation, and pioneering work that they did. And that's what we're trying to do.
So you've made that a mission.
Yes.
What have you done, or how did you, as you say, when you started to research this yourself, nobody was able to tell you their names. What steps did you take to remedy that?
I wound up at the 40th anniversary of ENIAC and then the 50th anniversary of ENIAC. And so I met them and I got to know them because they attended. Mm. And it was really interesting to find groups of men talking about ENIAC. But then there were these groups of women talking at a very technical level about ENIAC. Okay. And it turns out when I first met four of them, when I first met Betty, Marlon, Jean, and Kay, at the 40th anniversary of ENIAC, they were talking something very technical. I didn't understand it. They were words I didn't recognize, and I had been programming for years at that point. But it turns out they were talking about the bug in their program the night before demonstration day. There's always a bug in the program the night before a demonstration, right? And so they were talking about theirs, and it was just incredible.
I can imagine. In terms of, this was an opportunity for them. You said they were recruited from college, Kathy. In terms of their subsequent careers, what kind of trajectory did they take? Did they continue to work in computing? Did they work in advocacy, or what other areas?
It's a good question. Initially, after the war, they didn't stop working. Many women were asked to leave the factories and farms fairly quickly after the war ended. And the Army invited them all to stay, which is very unusual, in part because ENIAC wasn't ready for delivery until about 6 months after the war was over. And the delivery problem on ENIAC was the ballistics trajectory program. So the women were a critical part of delivering this very, very expensive machine to the Army. So even in February, though, even after the war was over, even after Demonstration Day, the Army asked them to stay. And they went down to an Army base called Aberdeen Proving Ground, which is where the ENIAC was relocated about a year after it was created. And they became the teachers of the next generation of programmers, who would be both women and men. And this time they created the materials. Nobody had to learn it from the wiring diagrams. Mm. The programmers made sure, the original ENIAC programmers made sure that future ENIAC programmers had a much easier time of it. Many of the women left after that, but Betty Schneider Holberton went on to UNIVAC. She went on to work on UNIVAC, which is the first commercial computer. And she created the instruction code for UNIVAC. She created the world's first sort routine for an all-electronic computer. And she created the first software application. She's just a pioneer of some of the software techniques that everything is built on. Mm-hmm.
So, Kathy, as you say, it by default or by for a number of reasons in those early years of computer programming, it was for one reason or another a woman's job, or it was a sphere that was dominated by women. What changed? When did it become so male dominated? Did you come across that in any of your research?
No, in part because I'm not a computer historian of long periods of time. Actually, when I dug down, I found more and more women. It wasn't just the ENIAC programmers. The software team at UNIVAC, which was run under Grace Hopper, they brought her down from Boston. The software team at UNIVAC was all women too. So everywhere I looked, there were more and more women in early computing. I like to say programming was a pink-collar profession for about the first decade. And that made me very proud, of course. So at some point, things will change, particularly around the early PC time, but also the late mainframe time. But I can't track it for you. I guess we can look at the glass half empty or half full. If you don't mind, I'm going to look at it as half full. I've gone around the world showing the documentary that I was finally able to make. It's a documentary short. It premiered at the Seattle International Film Festival. It won Best Documentary Short from the United Nations Film Festival. It premiered in Ireland at Inspire Fest, as we were talking earlier. Mm-hmm. And the reaction has been universal. We've shown it in Tel Aviv and Zurich and London. And the reaction, I'm always amazed. I get these women cheering with tears coming down their, you know, coming down their faces. They are so excited to hear about the history. They're so excited to hear that they're not the first women in the field. Many of them, especially in Seattle, we were with, you know, tech companies and women from tech companies. And often they're the only ones on their teams, even on their floors, in the meetings they attend, the only women. And they were just so excited to find out that there were women pioneers and that they could, you know, cite back to these role models that they didn't know existed. And I find now when I go to Google or Bloomberg that actually, according to the studies, and I think you mentioned one of them before we started talking, according to the studies, the best teams, the most successful teams actually have men and women. And I think history actually tells us that. ENIAC and UNIVAC had men and women. And Google and Bloomberg are looking, and they actually want to hire more women and minorities than they can find. So the opportunities are there, just like during World War II. The opportunities are there. It's time to break down the walls and the stereotypes, because we actually need everyone in these fields. And these are incredible jobs that everyone should benefit from, and everyone should enjoy the salaries from. So I think history tells us to go after our best and brightest and most creative and unusual people and bring them into computing. So I hope we follow history.
A piece of research that I read recently, Kathy, was pointing out that in many ways, they were talking about advancing the case for women in technology in particular, and they were saying, well, we still have some work to do in academia, but not in the business sector, because as far as business is concerned, the case for gender equality is proven. And it's a business. Any business CEO that's worth his salt knows that diversity and equality are actually keys to productivity. So, as you say, the jury is in on that. There's no further debate about things like that. I think it's interesting, Kathy. I think one of the things I'm picking up from what you're saying is that if you look at these teams and you dig deeper, you find the women, you see that they're there, but perhaps there's been a problem of perception and perhaps even PR, in that maybe women get the job done, but they don't beat their chests or crow or flap their wings much as much as the guys do.
That may be the case. And in fact, when I speak in front of young women, I look them dead in the eye and I'm like, put your names on the papers.
Yes.
If you are the lead, put your name down as the lead. You know, it's there is this tendency sometimes for women to step back and not claim the credit, particularly if they're part of a team. But they really have to claim the credit, because future, you know, girls and future programmers need to know who came before them. And need to know, you know, who shaped their field and who created things. So my guess is that there are tons and tons of unwritten stories and untold stories of great women pioneers, minority pioneers in computing, and that if we dig hard enough, we'll find them and share them, and that would be great.
There is an issue, Kathy, nowadays. I think that you often find that women are certainly signing up for science, technology, engineering and mathematics courses. They're going into jobs, but they're either not finishing the course, they're sometimes not finishing their studies, sometimes not progressing in the jobs. And by the time you get to senior management, it's a boys' club.
Yes. Yes. The attrition rate is huge in computing. So even once we, you know, once we encourage women to go into STEM and mentor them through the process, as we would mentor men, and help everybody graduate, once they get, you're right, once they get into those computing careers, they tend to leave at much, much greater rates than men.
And then bearing in mind that this is not, you know, this is not good for business any more than it's good for women. Is there anything we can do about this? Is there a lesson here perhaps from what you've learned?
It's interesting. After we screen the documentary at various places, sometimes there are discussions about how to make, among women professionals, among men professionals in tech, about how to make the work environment more welcoming. Mm-hmm. And how to promote women at the same rate you promote men. So Google, for example, has been doing unconscious bias training. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they're giving it to, I think every manager has gone through unconscious bias training or did a few years ago. And so I heard men and women talk about discovering their unconscious biases. Yeah. So making people aware of that is huge. Google also is working very hard on its promotion strategies and making sure that everyone who's eligible for promotion nominates him or herself, and teaching people how to do that and walking them through, because some people don't know. And it's actually not just women. There are certain societies where self-promotion isn't a big thing, and they're finding that those people weren't getting promoted as quickly either. And so this kind of teaching everyone how to positively promote themselves what was something that Google was doing to help this attrition issue as well.
And Google has supported your work as well, Kathy, am I right?
Google has greatly supported my work, which is one of the reasons we had this wonderful world tour of Google offices to share it. Initially, Megan Smith found me. She was a senior VP at Google X working on moonshot projects, but she left Google and went to the White House, and she was the first female chief technology officer in the United States under President Obama. And so she was a tremendous cheerleader and supporter of the project. And the wives of Google founders through their family foundations are the reason, Ann Wojcicki and Lucy Southworth Page, are the reasons that my documentary called The Computers, The Remarkable Story of the ENIAC Programmers, was able to be finished thanks to their support. But we also got donations from people all over the world who wanted to hear this story told.
Where can people find out more, Kathy? You have a website for your project.
I do. We share a trailer and a link to the documentary at eniacprogrammers.org. And universities and colleges can get the documentary, as well as schools, any organization that actually wants to buy it. There are actually three documentaries. The Computers is the one about the ENIAC programmers. We did a second documentary called The Coders about two marvelous women who were leads on the teams that created Java and Flash. And then a young woman for our third documentary called The Future Makers, that she was very active in visual recognition and creating some of the technologies for facial recognition and gestural recognition. And so these three documentaries are in distribution through a distributor called Women Make Movies. And you can find them at wmm.com/computers. And so two different places to get it, the ENIAC Programmers Project or Women Make Movies.
It sounds like once you started doing a little research, it led to more and more.
It did. Just remarkable pioneers and programmers that we should all know about.
What is the message, Kathy, do you think, or what is the lesson to be learned? What is the message, and perhaps in particular, what is the inspiration that the ENIAC programmers offer to, I suppose, young women starting out in technology today?
I think the message is that we all belong. We were all there at the start. Women and men were at the start of modern computing, and we all belong there today. And if we're going to develop the best technologies, if we're going to expand the internet to the next 2 billion people, we need everyone, and everyone who's excited and interested in computer science. So the message is, don't play with stereotypes and don't listen to negative messages. Find the positive messages and find the pioneers, because they're amazing.
You're listening to the Black Knight podcast, and that interview was with Kathy Kleiman. You can find out more about this subject at Kathy's site, eniacprogrammers.org. It includes links to where you can get those three documentary films she talked about via an organization called Women Make Movies. You can also find out more about Kathy's work with the newly relaunched Domain Name Rights Coalition at dnrc.tech. Black Knight is Ireland's number one provider of web hosting, domain names and internet services. And this episode of the Black Knight podcast is part of a series on women in entrepreneurship and technology, which we're bringing to you in association with .co, the domain name for entrepreneurs. .co names are on special offer right now for just $10.99 ex VAT for the first year, and they come with membership of the .co membership program. You can find out more at blackknight.co, and don't forget to visit blackknight.blog/podcast for more information, notes on this week's show, and the links to subscribe for future episodes of the podcast. Next week, we'll continue our features on women in tech and business when we interview Kim McKenzie Doyle, president of the Institute of Designers in Ireland. They're launching a new initiative for women in design next week on International Women's Day, March the 8th. Finally, yes, we have a new website over at blackknight.com. If you haven't seen it already, check it out if you get a chance and let us know what you think. Good day and taft and shahu in marshin, wemsha conamwin hun, slán agus benacht.